Welcome to another episode of A Minute Till Six. I'm your host, Mark Haynes, MH the Champ, along with my co-host, Chris Perry, Chris.PerrySR. And today, on the phone line, we got a guy I've been hunting down for a while now. He was drafted in the NFL in 2001. He was a seventh-round draft pick with one of the most unique names, last names, in NFL history, Mr. T.J. Houshmandzadeh. I got it right there, didn't I?
Yeah, that was good, man. Pretty good.
hey, T.J., I wanted to start with talking about getting drafted in 2001 to the Cincinnati Bengals. You was a seventh-round pick. What was going through your head, and what was your draft night like?
I'm an honest person, so I'm gonna keep it 100. I was pissed off. I'll never forget this day though, because I wasn't married at the time, but my wife now, she was my girlfriend at the time, and I'll never forget this, man. Never forget it. I remember exactly where I was. I remember exactly what I was doing. I was watching the Lakers and the Portland Trail Blazers. I'll never forget it. And I was pissed off. Like, I was so angry because I had run really fast. I had jumped really high. I went to the East-West Shrine Game, had like 3 catches for over 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing guys that I'm better than, that I trained with leading up to the draft, that can't touch me. And they were getting drafted, so it just made me angry. Like, I was so, so angry. I'd never forget it. And so, yeah, watching the Portland Trail Blazers and the Lakers play, and it was, like, disgusting me. Like, I didn't want to watch TV because I was so mad. And then that just kind of drove me my whole career. Drove me. The following week, we had Ricky Minicamp. I was like, first dude say something to me, I'm hitting him in the mouth. Like, I'm fighting dudes every day now. And it's because I was angry about it. And then once all that dies down, I mean, shit, you just still got to go play football.
Right.
But, yeah, I'll never forget that day, man, exactly what I was doing and where I was at. Never forget it.
I mean, so what did you have was there a list of teams that was, like, showing high interest in you that made you feel a certain way that they would take you, or it was just the fact you had to wait so long?
No, I honestly thought that I was, prior to the draft, my agent had told me the 49ers had 2 third-round picks, and they would probably use one of them to draft me. And the 49ers, I know they drafted one receiver in the 6th round with Cedric Wilson. Ended up training his son a couple years ago for the draft. I don't know if they did draft the guy in the 3rd round or not, but they messed up.
Nah, man, for real.
I mean, it was just
they did.
The draft is an inexact science. They don't, I mean, no disrespect to anybody that does it, but it's a crapshoot, and it's not an exact science. But if you really know what you're doing and you got good coaches, you shouldn't have a lot of busts, so to speak, with guys that are drafted high. If you got good coaching and you guys are evaluating guys the right way, physically and mentally, and not just physically, guys should succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that, man. I think when you're doing any draft in any league, but specifically the NFL, you have to kind of have the right situation. Like, you can have guys that are potential ceilings through the roof, but if they don't go into the right situation, then they become the bust. But was it really them, or was it their environment?
Oh, 100%. We can go back to a guy that I played with at Cincinnati. It wasn't long, and people should know this name. It is Achilles Smith.
Yep.
Okay?
Yeah.
People would say Achilles Smith was a bust, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he was a third pick. 1, 2, 3. Dude sat, waited 30 minutes before he got drafted. I waited, got down, felt like 30 days. he was a bust. Was Achilles really a bust? Or was the environment not conducive for him to become the player he should have become in where he was drafted? But people always look at the player and say, oh, man, the player is terrible. He's a bust.
Right.
Where's the development at? Where's the growth of the player mentally? And so, but the coaches, they get a pass. It's always this kid's a bust. Oh, this guy can't play. And part of it is on the player.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it also was the development of the player from a mental perspective that always gets overlooked when the guy, quote unquote, is a bust.
Right.
It's never looked at as the organization and the coach that should be developing him, not developing him.
Mm-hmm. And putting the right guys around him. That's like kind of how I felt about David Carr, Derek Carr's older brother, David Carr. You know, we from Fresno, so we keep up with our Fresno people. But
when you're the first pick of the draft, you shouldn't be a bust.
Yeah. And he got sacked the most in the NFL for seven straight years or whatever whatnot. So it's
and I know the first 2 years he set a record.
Yeah.
For getting sacked.
Yeah.
So it's the wrong record.
It's hard to do anything when you're getting hit like that back there. And with the Bengals this year, they got it's pretty much a. Most would say an easy choice on who's going number one this year. What do you think about that?
Well, I try to, if you're being proactive and objective, you have to, if you're the Bengals here, really look into the situation. Yeah, it can be very easy in draft Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can become something where somebody offers you a deal that it's hard to turn down. The Miami Dolphins. You got to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You got to think about it. Now, will the Bengals do it? I doubt it. But if I'm running the Bengals, I think about it. I was on the field with Joe. I worked out with Joe. I've seen Joe train. I've seen him. Easy choice to draft him. He's going to be a good player. He's going to have success. No. He's going to do well for the Bengals. I'll say he'll be with first quarterback in I don't know however many years to lead the Bengals to a playoff victory, in my opinion. I believe he has those type of intangibles.
Mm.
But if you're doing your due diligence, it should not be easy, because if somebody makes you a deal, you have to seriously consider it, because you have the first pick for a reason. You were 2-14 for a reason. One player is not going to come in and make that much of a difference. You need players, and I mean plural. And if Miami or any other team presents that opportunity, you have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. I'm seeing the buzz right now that Miami is trying to get to three and keep five at the same time. But that actually made me question whether they were trying to take those two picks and move up to one or something. So I'm with you on that, man. You gotta listen to at least what's out there. There him that isn't. But Joe shouldn't be the surprise. I think at this point he's probably locked in at one. Outside of that, I think it's gonna be a lot of craziness going on.
Mm-hmm.
The draft is always an inexact science. Joe has what? If he gets drafted to the Bengals, it's not like, and I say what I'm about to say, and after just saying they were 2-14 for a reason, but it's not like he's going into the pantry and it's empty.
Yeah.
The Bengals have good players. They have good players.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They just have to figure out a way to turn it around. And is Joe that guy? We don't know. You know, time will tell. You got A.J. Green. You got Tyler Boyd. You got John Ross. You got, I believe, is C.J. Uzuma as a tight end. You got Joe Mixon. Just the skill guys alone, they got players. Jonah Williams should come back. First-round pick from last year. And so the additions they made on through free agency, they have players.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of who's going to get into that locker room and lead first day. Straight up let them know what it is. And excuse my language, but you got to let them know all the bullshit y'all been doing, it stops now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hold y'all accountable. I'm going to hold myself accountable. Y'all going to hold me accountable. But all the bullshit, it got to stop. We going to win. And if you not about that, get the fuck up out of here. And it does not have to be Joe, but somebody has to give that team that type of message to let them know mediocrity will not be accepted. And until that happens, until you get leaders that care, you always gonna get a fraction of the team that they gonna go out on Tuesday night, get drunk, knowing they got practice Wednesday. Nah, we ain't doing none of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you gotta nip that in the bud, and somebody has to lead. And you can lead by example, and you can lead by example, and you can lead verbally. But you gotta, if you're gonna do it, you gotta be the hardest working guy on the team by example, and they will follow you. That's the biggest thing, because when you have a losing culture, obviously I was a part of one,
mm-hmm.
it's as soon as things start going bad, oh, here we go again. No. Let's get these negative thoughts out of our mind, and let's think positive, and let's just work. That has to be the main emphasis that first day. Somebody has to take over that meeting, and it can't be a coach. It has to be a player, and this is what it is.
Right.
If you're not doing it, you can't be here.
Right, straight up.
Three points.
And back to when you was playing, and which you was in a unique situation as far as one of your teammates. You played with them in college, got drafted in the same year, and went to the same team, played the same position, and that's Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco, man. What's a big misunderstanding people may have about you guys' relationship and how you guys coexist for years with the Bengals and at Oregon State?
We were cool. Like, I don't know what, you know, people's perception of it may have been. We were cool. It was Chad experienced success before I did. But with that being said, I still thought I was a better player. And I should think that.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't think anybody
Absolutely.
Was better than me. But if he experienced success before I did. Chad, in my opinion, is one of the best receivers to ever play football. Should be in the Hall of Fame. Probably will never get in. But off of talent, it's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a student. I love sports. I love sports, period. Football, basketball. I watch everything.
Mm-hmm.
And talent-wise, Chad is one of the best receivers to ever play football. And so from a physical perspective, there were things that Chad did you can't do because you're just not as gifted as he is.
Mm-hmm.
But our relationship was fine. We were different type of players. He helped me. I helped him as well. And so our relationship, we never had a problem because although we had a friendly competition,
mm-hmm.
he was really good at one thing. I was really good at another thing, and it didn't overlap each other. What he did really well wasn't my strong suit. What I did really well wasn't his strong suit. And so
mm-hmm.
we complemented each other well. We respected each other's game. We trained together pretty much our entire career. And so I let you know right there, we got along.
Right.
And it was just constant pushing each other. Mm-hmm. You being a punk today. Oh, you don't want to work today, honey. You soft.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's that type of banner where we would go back and forth with it, even in practice. Like, me and Chad pretty much did scout team our entire career because we competed with each other in practice as well. Like,
mm-hmm.
we taking all the scout team reps
mm-hmm.
because we was constantly competing with each other all the time. And
mm-hmm.
so, yeah, our relationship was fine and still is.
Was it ever you know, I always felt like that too. Like I grew up in a culture of from a school called Edison High School in Fresno, where we had that same type of culture and practice. Like, you know, you go at your teammates, you push them, you know what I'm saying? You may get into it, you may have arguments or whatever, but it's all love and it's friendly competition. But did the media ever, was it ever difficult for you guys to get along with the media and people kind of, you know, maybe want to put you against each other and stuff and say, oh, maybe Chad didn't get so many catches this game or you didn't or whatever. Was it ever difficult to quiet the media and just do you guys?
For me, no, because it was, say, for instance, we played a game and I had a really good game and Chad had an average game.
Mm-hmm.
The law of averages next week is probably going to be reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would always work its work itself out. Like, for I'd get 8 catches. I'd probably have 80 or 90 yards. Chad gets 4 catches, have 120 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And so although I had more catches, he had more yards. We both helped the team in different ways. He probably had a touchdown. I probably had 3 or 4 mm-hmm. third down conversions. And so that's why I say our games complemented each other. And it was never like, you got to understand, me and Chad met when we was in college. And so
mm-hmm.
we grew together. We trained together. We pushed each other in the off season so that none of that stuff really mattered, man. Nah, they couldn't do that because he knew me, I knew him,
mm-hmm.
and we trying to ball out and win, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we
really grew up together.
We came in again. I think this is well documented. Like, I'll give you an example, man, because I normally wouldn't even say this, but I think this has been spoken about. Like, I would tell Chad to play. Like, if I want, like, I could have sabotaged him that ain't me. Like, I'm mm-hmm. as real as they come. I'm not a $3 bill.
Mm-hmm.
And if so, like, in college, I told Chad what to do every play. When we got to Cincinnati, if Chad was ever confused, I told him what to do. And so, he my partner. That's my dog. You my teammate. I want to win. You don't got it. I got you. And
mm-hmm.
so, that's well documented that if Chad was ever confused, I told him, you got this. And we was on the other side of the field, we had hand signals.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
And so it was all love. I want to win. You my partner. Let's go.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
Yeah, that's dope, man. So you go from 7th round pick, you got your former teammate with you, you guys balling on the next level, growing into men, and then you have your 2007 season. Where you go off. I mean, you had a nice, I think 4 straight years of 1,000 yards at that point. But you had your 2007 year, and you lead the league in catches, I think 112 receptions that year. You go to the Pro Bowl, man. How was that experience for you?
I mean, it was fine. Like, honestly, like, I was an All-Pro more than I was a Pro Bowler. Go figure.
Yeah.
For me, I felt I should have been probably 2 years prior to that. I mean, if I was playing in today's age, I'd be like an 8-time Pro Bowler.
Mm-hmm.
The way it is today. But I always felt like I was on par with those guys. Because I've worked out and trained with so many different guys coming up in the league. And I got my respect that way because they saw me on the field. And they saw me in the off season. Like, I mean, I won't say any names, but I vividly remember guys coming out, like, training with us, like, oh, my God. Like, I didn't think he was this good. Oh, okay, yeah, all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I guess I don't know how I could relate this to, like, a guy in the NBA, but, shit, I'm going to just get buckets, man. I'm getting buckets. Like, you ain't going to stop me. I don't give a damn how it look, but I'm putting up 25 every game.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but a lot of it, too, though, was my confidence and my belief in myself. And I think because of the way I came in, I had to have that. But going to the Pro Bowl, it's fun. I felt long overdue. Should have been there, like I said, a couple years prior.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, I felt like my game was that before I made it, and it was that afterwards.
So you always just walked around with that confidence forever. Because I was going to ask you what made you so good, but I'm sure it's got to do with your confidence. So I'm going to just
part of it is, I don't know why I've always been this way, man. it's probably overboard, but I got a son now. He's 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
We play, I beat his ass. Like, if we play video games, I'm beating his ass. If we play something, like, we just played a game of Sorry before I got on the phone with John. He beat me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, all right, we're playing again. I'm beating your ass next game. And so I want him to know, like, we compete at everything we do, man. It's
mm-hmm.
a competition. Yeah. Either you trying to be the best or you trying to be average. Yeah. Bro, chill, bro. or you trying to be average. There's no in between. You the best or you the worst. There's nothing in between.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I look at my story, man. Like, not many people, like, you talking to somebody that my entire life growing up, I played 1 year of organized sports. That was my senior year in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't graduate from high school. I go to JUCO.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not recruited out of high school. I go to JUCO. Coming out of JUCO, it's like, wow, in 2 years, I have no offers out of high school, but I didn't graduate. That's okay. And I'm the number one junior college player in the country when I came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just always felt like I had to prove myself. I don't know why. And it held true, getting drafted late. Up, you got to go prove yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Should have been to the Pro Bowl. And 05, up, you got to go prove yourself again. And so it's always been that way. And that's cool because that's something that I can handle. You can say I suck. I'm cool with that. Whatever you think I suck at, I think I'm better than you at. I might not be, but damn it, I sure believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And TJ, man,
that's epic, man.
Who was the toughest guy that covered you in your career?
Good question.
Oh, man, that's a tough question because, like, a lot of teams, you know, they would double us or they play certain coverages. But just off top, the best guy that I went against was Champ Bailey.
I don't know why I knew that.
And then there's a guy that was probably the second toughest guy that I went against. And I'm going to say his name, and y'all not going to know who he is. His name is Lee Biden.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. See?
I couldn't hear you say it again.
Lee Biden, LEIGHBODDEN. Lee Biden. He played in Cleveland.
Oh.
If I'm not mistaken, this I'll tell you, I'm a fan of the game. If I'm not mistaken, if I know, I believe he went to Duquesne.
Yeah, I'm going
to
look
him up. Got drafted to the Browns, left Cleveland, went to the Patriots, left the Patriots, went to the Detroit Lions. I don't know how I know this shit crazy, but I believe that's his value. But Lee was big. He was fast. He wasn't a punk. He was a competitor. He just was really good, and he never got the credit he deserved because he played in Cleveland.
Yep.
And so, but Lee Biden was, outside of Champ Bailey, was the toughest guy.
So when you said his name, I thought he was a Patriot until you said that he was in Cleveland. But you said he did play the Patriots, so I remember the name vaguely. That's interesting to hear. Here, but Cleveland, and he kind of just disappeared. So,
he could play, man. Lee was good. He could play.
Nice. And you was a physical guy. So was it the fact that, you know, were both big guys that could kind of, you know, kind of compete with you physically, or is that what made him so tough?
Yeah, I mean, he had the size to compete with you physically. He was quick. He was, I mean, and there's another guy, like, I can, and I name guys that we're in the division with because you played them more often. This guy I'm about to name, too, he got credit because they were always pretty good. Was Ike Taylor in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Him and Lee Biden were very similar. Big, fast dudes, and they not no punks. Like, they was dudes that they ain't take no shit, even though I would get into it with them, but they ain't take no shit, and they could play. Probably didn't get the credit they deserve, especially the dude like Ike Taylor, because you playing on a team, you got all these different guys on the team, and you kind of get overlooked. But those dudes, they're big. They can be physical just like I can. They can run. And so it was always a battle. I mean, for me, it was always respect. But people, you know, I talk so much shit that they probably took it personal.
Y'all had in common, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I like, you know, Chad, like, talked shit, but it was all in good fun. Mine was, like, real, real talk. I guess it kind of, if you relate it to the NBA, would kind of be like how Draymond Green just be talking shit, trying to punk everybody. I guess that's how mine was. That's how it was.
Yeah, so, yeah, people didn't like you then, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, I ain't mean to harm by it. That's just me. We can be cool afterwards, but I think they took a lot of that shit personal. And I'm like, all right, it is what it is.
Oh, man, that's funny. And then, go ahead, Chris, go ahead.
No, I was saying, I mean, I hear him keep making references to the NBA and things like that. I know you said you're a sports savant. Wondering about, have you been watching the Jordan documentary, part one and part two?
Oh, yeah, I watched that. I'm a fan, man. Like, I love sports. And so I had never watched anything, really, to be honest with you. All I ever watch is sports. I don't watch nothing else. All sports. Like, dudes go to the movies, like, oh, man, they be making all these movie references. I'm like, I don't know what they talking about. All I do is watch sports. And so now I'm just starting to get into Netflix because I have no choice because ain't no sports on. And all you can watch games that I've watched before, no outcome, but I love sports, man. That's all I do.
No, I'm just comparison because I hear a lot of that competitive nature that you're speaking about in MJ, same, competing, just, you got to be first. Ricky Bobby, I guess you could say, if you ain't first, you're last. There's a movie reference for you. what have you taken from the documentary so far that has been your favorite part, I guess you could say, your favorite piece that you've seen or heard that you probably didn't know before?
Well, I mean, I grew up, I'm a Laker fan, and so I didn't like the Bulls.
Likewise.
Jordan was beating us. But I can appreciate, as you get older, to me, I'd never forget watching the Bulls. It was like Michael Jordan never missed. I mean, obviously he did, but it felt like he would never miss. But, I guess the biggest takeaway was it was the determination of, think about this. Let's think about this real quick. Go back to when, in the documentary, where he got cut his sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And he went home and told his mama. And that's well documented. Everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
But what is crazy is what his mama said.
Right,
you wasn't good enough.
She said,
get better. Man, you know what would happen today?
Oh, man.
You cut my son?
Today's
transferring. That's what would happen today. His mom, oh, you ain't good enough. Get better. Today's day and age, we transferring. Oh, you go at Edison High School? Oh, we leaving Edison. We going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
We going to high school in Bakersfield. I mean, they leaving. So that was the biggest, you take that away. But just I walk into the room and they doing cocaine over here. They doing weed over here. You got women over here.
Right.
It looks like I'm a pretty much be by myself, my wiki. That's good, but I'm a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get, I tell people all the time, I felt like I was a good player, and I felt like I worked my ass off. But as hard as I thought I worked, I should probably work a little harder because you look at the guys that are the best, the Michael Jordan, the LeBron, the Steph Curry,
mm-hmm.
and them dudes is working their ass off.
Yeah.
They working their – you just don't – you're good. You're really physically gifted and good, but you got to work your ass off to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And
we
all think we working hard. Them dudes is killing themselves. And that's the biggest takeaway you take away from stuff like that is, okay, I'm going to put myself in the gym. Another one was when he got hurt and they told him he couldn't play. Can I go down to Carolina? And he was down there scrimmaging and stuff. And it's no, that's why he was what he was, and he is who he is today.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no substitute, man, for hard work and dedication. None. Zero.
At all. Undefeated.
Yeah, that's, I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of this. Part one and part two, it wasn't enough, so we got 8 more of them to go.
They're going to string it out for 2 months, but it's like we ain't got nothing else to do.
The governor talked about what we locked down till August or whatever. So, we here for it, man. And speaking of the governor and stuff, a little off topic, but it's another main topic. COVID-19 has, hit the world, hard and quick. And what have you been doing with your time since, you know, you got time off and, you know, everybody's, you know, at home for the most part. What have you been up to? I know you mentioned Netflix and stuff. What else you been going on with you?
Not much, man. You know, like I said, like you just said, Netflix. Luckily, I enjoy my family, so that's not. I won't be one of these guys that file for divorce when this is over with. I enjoy my wife and my kids, so from that perspective, we good. Is it training my guys? We still been getting out on the field. We took about a 2-week break. I got a little nervous about the coronavirus, so we stopped working for about 2 weeks. But we've been on the field again, just training, mm-hmm. making sure my guys is ready. So when they say it's time to play ball, my guys is ready to go. Because I know if I was a player, you want to be prepared than not prepared. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be guys that are working out, but they really not working out.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's time to come back, they're going to use that time to get in shape.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my guys, they're going to be ready to go. We hitting the ground running. We ain't going to get in shape. We're going to be getting better. And so that's what mm-hmm. we're doing, man. I'm out there on the field about an hour and a half, 3 to 4 times a week with my guys and just making sure they're going to be ready to go when they blow that whistle.
That's what's up. That's what's up. And, man, it's this comes since a youngster. I think I was in high school at this point, man. You had one of the best NFL commercials ever when they was trying to get your name right. Do you remember how you were approached with you know, or hit with the news that they wanted to do a commercial on your name?
Well, you're gonna laugh at this. They ain't approached me about nothing. They just did what they wanted to do.
Really?
I had no lie. I had no idea. Like we're in training camp, and I believe it was a coach came with. You seen the commercial? I'm like, what commercial? I'm like, oh, I ain't been able, no, I ain't seen it. I hadn't seen it. And then when I finally saw it, I mean, I was like everybody else, man. I don't take stuff that serious, man. I laugh. I thought it was funny. But yeah, ask me. They did what they wanted to do. They ain't asked me nothing.
Wow.
Oh,
so you, but you being funny.
Can't take it personal at all, man. No, I'm just, he mentioned training camp. And I was still, you know, running along the lines of COVID-19. I'm running along the baselines of like the NFL offseason and how much is affected right now from a player standpoint. Like, are they behind track? Is it like, where would you usually be at in the offseason right now? And how much of that is affected as a player?
OTAs would have just started. So they would have workouts, basically meaning they would have two or three different times you could work out. Normally, they like to schedule the groups, meaning when I say work out, it's strength and conditioning. And so say they split it up, DBs and receivers start at 8. You're in the weight room from about 8 to 9:30. You're on the field from 9:30 to 10:30. That next group would start at 11 and so forth and so on. And then you would get on the field and practice 2 to 3 days a week. And so that's what they're missing, the practice, the cohesiveness, the camaraderie. The vets are probably like, cool. They don't mind it. If they know how to prepare themselves,
right.
If they know how to prepare themselves, they're cool with this because they probably want to stay home and do what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But the younger guys, these are reps that they can't get back because this is kind of how you prove yourself a little bit. You do so well in OTAs that heading into training camp, these coaches say, let me mark TJ down as a guy that I need to get some more reps in camp. I like the way he looked in OTAs, in
mm-hmm.
mini camps.
Mm-hmm.
And so those reps aren't there. And so that's why I tell my guys, when they blow that whistle, you better be ready. Because if you're not going to be ready, you've already missed out on a ton of reps. You're pretty much cutting yourself by what you're doing now or what you're not doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so would you say this season, everybody, kind of the teams that kind of bringing back the majority of their starters and players, like they're going to be kind of ahead of the curve. rather than a team that's bringing a lot of new faces?
They, on the surface level, they should be, they should have an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two things can happen. You could either have some guys that have a pretty good football IQ, they'll pick things up no problem, or you have coaches that realize that they don't have a high IQ team, and they simplify things until the players are able to grasp and understand what's going on. So you can look at it two ways and say, ah, this team, is they got a pretty good IQ. They're going to pick things up. Football is universal, man. Like, I'll call a play Fresno. You call it Bakersfield. The next guy might call it Los Angeles. It's the same play.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just got to make sure that we understand the concept of the play. We understand where to line up formation-wise. And that just comes up. The team is smart. We're good. The team isn't. The coaches will simplify things until they catch up. So it shouldn't be that much of a problem. It's not that much of a big deal. And if you're one of those guys that aren't very smart, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, man.
And then to
we
ain't gonna hold you up too much longer. Just a few more questions, but when you got done playing with football, did you know the next thing for you was to be a sports analyst? Did you know that was gonna be in store for you?
Honestly, I would say yes and no. I believe it was towards my end of my career, one of the executives at ESPN flew me out to Bristol, Connecticut and was like, think you'll be good. Been watching interviews in Cincinnati. I think you'll be good for this, blah, blah, blah. So I went out there and I did, quote, unquote, car wash, did all the shows. And I thought, oh, it's going to be very easy. As soon as I reach out, I'm going to go straight into the media. Not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Two things happened. That was not the case. And when I did do it, it's harder than it looks. And mm-hmm. It's not as easy as it looks to just get on there and talk. And you're talking. You got people in your ear telling you, okay, you got 15 seconds. All right, hurry up. And it's not as those dudes that really get on TV and do it, they're talented, man. It's not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
But I always wanted, I'm sure you guys see, I like to talk.
Mm-hmm.
I watch sports, and so I feel like I'm well-informed. A lot of it is opinionated, and if it's statistically based, that's easy to research that with the way the Internet
right.
is now. And so it's something that I've always wanted to do, but it wasn't as easy or seamless as I thought it would be when I was playing. And so that was something I learned. I would have probably done more towards the end of my career. Media-wise, while I was playing, like you see guys doing now,
mm-hmm.
so that when I did finish, it would have been a little more easier, it would have been a little more seamlessly that I can transition into that. And so that's probably something that I screwed up myself. But I've always wanted to do stuff like this, like I said, because I just love sports, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Understandable. One of my last questions before I get them out is pre-draft, of course, who is your pick to win next year?
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Let me, can I give you two teams on each conference? Or you just want two teams?
No,
so,
we can go to the championships, the NFC and the AFC championship game.
Yeah, okay. Let's do that. Oh, man, right now I would probably say Tampa Bay Bucks and the NFC will play either the 49ers
uh-huh.
or
well, you got this guy over here.
Seattle Seahawks.
Ooh, Seahawks.
So them,
Seahawks, got it.
Yeah, one of the – yeah, well, Russell Wilson is just too good, man. Like, that dude is – he's just too good. Is he always going to put his team right there?
Mm-hmm.
And in the AFC, I would go with Kansas City, Baltimore, and it's always going to be a team that always kind of surprises. Let's say
like Titans last year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. let's say Buffalo. Let's say Buffalo. I like Stephon Diggs. I like their head coach and defensively what they do. Josh Allen is going to improve, and so I'd say, that will probably be the teams that I envision. Especially you look like Team Tennessee, they're pretty much returning their whole roster with the way this is gone. This is
out of 22 starters.
Mm-hmm. Gets no better. But the thing is now, even everybody wants to be thrown a Super. They're gonna get everybody. They're gonna get everybody's best game. Everybody is. So they know that. Andy Reid knows that. But when you have Patrick Mahomes and the speed they got on the outside with Kelce, man, it's bring your best shot. We got the weapons to deal right with it.
Yes, sir. My last one is just a little friendly fun one. What's your top four wide receivers of all time?
Oh wow! Top four. I can go three right away. Rice, T.O., and Moss. That's easy. After that, very hard.
You gotta go
very
five
hard.
Or something, Mark. You can't go.
Yeah, that's what I was like. Yeah, I was thinking about that earlier.
I'd probably go Julio Jones.
Ooh.
And Chad.
Okay. Up there.
People will say, Chad don't belong in there. Man, if you's a real receiver, y'all know how Chad get down. You couldn't
stop. Chad got that work. That's people.
Yeah, I mean,
but that answers one of my questions I had that I didn't get to ask you, and that was who you think is the best receiver in the league. Now you already said who is the top four, so that answers that.
No, I mean, but Julio is because of he's been great for some. Like right now, the best receiver is a toss up in my opinion between Mike Thomas. And DeAndre Hopkins. Julio's probably the third best one right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's Mike Thomas and Hopkins.
Yeah, I mean, Antonio Brown, man.
There's so many good. Antonio Brown ain't 10. He ain't on the team. And so it's like you don't even count him right now.
Right.
So, I can't include him in that. He wasn't on the team last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's not on the team this year. But it's so many good receivers now. Like, This who's the best receiver is so fluid. It can change year to year because, I mean, you look at a guy like Tyreek Hill. Nobody never names him as one of their top receivers. Tyreek Hill, go.
Right.
So, I mean, it's so many guys, man, that if you look at it can just really – A.J. Green, his name used to get brought up, but he's been hurt so much lately, you don't bring him up. If he get back healthy, that's another name in the picture. So, it changes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's a dog, man.
All right, brother, man.
I appreciate you being here.
Yes, sir, man. We appreciate you, man. Hopefully we could do this again. And when it's COVID-19, hopefully we can.
I ain't got shit to do, man. I really don't be doing nothing, man. I just it look like I got stuff to do, but I really don't. I don't be doing nothing. I be chilling, man. But whenever, man, just reach out. I got you, man. 100%.
Yes, sir, man. What you working on Netflix right now, man?
I'm the last two nights, I haven't watched no Netflix because my son, I've been teaching him how to play Madden. And I don't even know. I'm learning how to play Madden again. So we're learning together.
Man.
But I'm moving now. I got one episode left of El Chapo. The last season. So once I finish El Chapo, then I'm going to start Narcos, and then I'm going to start Narcos Mexico.
Yeah.
And then I'm open to suggestions after that.
Yeah, man. I'm going to shoot you some suggestions, man, because I'm a Netflix guy over here, too. I was telling my brother, Chris Haynes, about what I text you about scheduling you for a time, and you was like, yeah, what time are you thinking? And I was like, 10 a.m.? You replied, not a chance.
hey, man, no lie. Like, last night, man, I went to bed at, like, no, I think it was, like, I don't even think, I turned the TV off. It was 3:17.
Oh, man. Like,
yeah.
317.
Yeah, that sounds like me. I don't know why. I don't know why, but
and I still be getting
happened,
up,
bro,
like,
I'm going to sleep at like 4 in the morning.
Dude. And, but I'm still awake. I woke up today, it was like 10:40, and I'm like, oh, I'm up. But my whole, the whole house is going to bed like that late.
Yeah.
Like my kids, they going to bed that late. It's like, I don't know how the hell I'm going to get them back on a normal schedule.
Right.
Like, oh, I'm going to just start waking them up early. So they be tired earlier and they start going to bed earlier or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Same here. I'm worried. That's what I worry about. But yeah, man, we going to let you get out of here and get back to the family. We appreciate you taking some time out to chop it up with us. If you want to mention your Instagram handle and Twitter handle so people can figure out where to find you.
Man, I'm not on Twitter, but I'm about to get on Twitter, man. I'm really going to get on Twitter because, like I said, I like to talk and I'm opinionated and everybody keeps telling me, you need to get on Twitter. I got on Instagram 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's TJHoosh84. Chad started my page. Because he told me you need to get on Instagram. And so, yeah, I've been getting that. I need to get on Twitter. So I think I'm going to get on Twitter here in the next week or so. I don't know what the name's going to be. But, yeah, I'm on Instagram at TJHoosh84.
All right. Appreciate you. And once again, y'all, this is the Minute Till 6 podcast. I'm your host, Mark Haynes, MH the Champ, along with my co-host.
And I'm Chris Perry.
And we ain't
Chris
talking about
Perry,
Chris
that's
Perry that played at Michigan either.
Hey, do you remember him? I definitely remember him. I was, you know, he had me with some high hopes for a minute. He led me all the way down. So we ain't gonna talk about, because I'm a Michigan fan.
Oh, really? That's my partner.
I'm a Michigan
fan. He was so physically talented, man. Dude, he was physically talented. God, that dude was so good.
We'll talk about that.
All right, I appreciate y'all, man.
All right, brother, man. Take it easy, bro.
Y'all take care, man. Y'all be safe.
Yes, sir.
You too. Peace.